So, hello. Thank you all for coming, however many you may be, out to the middle of our lonely desert place. It's really an amazing, amazing time here in the retreat. Very magical. And I think the first thing I'd like to say is thank you. First, to all the people who worked so hard and gave so much of their lives to build all of our cabins. We remember you every single day and we're so grateful. And we're using it to the best of our ability. And so thank you for believing in us enough to give your lifetimes to us like that. And I would like to thank our holy caretakers because they I think I should say we we would like to thank our holy caretakers. They serve us every single day. They come in on Wednesdays, but I know they serve us every single day of their lives. And they're giving us everything we need all the time. And even stuff we ask for that we don't need, they give us. And it's a big production to serve 39 people. It's a little bit different than five. And so we thank you. We couldn't do it without you. And not just for your service, but for your belief in us. And I'd like to thank all the people who are helping to fund that effort of the caretakers taking care of us, and especially Geshe Michael. I think he's sort of spearheading the program of making sure we have everything that we could possibly need. And thank you. I feel very taken care of. We all do. And I'd like to thank Lama Marut for taking time out of his busy schedule to come and teach during this time. It means a lot to me that you're here. And Cindy, if you're here, thank you. So let's meditate. fix your body completely still. Get all of the movement out now, and then just sink into the pose. It's the ultimate asana, right? And feel your body sinking down into the earth. And then feel that pull, like the pull of gravity. Then simultaneously there's another pull upwards, like keeping you afloat, going towards the sky. And there's these two opposing forces inside of you that perfects the pose. The prana and the apana flowing. And within that you find stillness. Stillness of body leads to stillness of mind. So let your body fall still. And you don't have to think of anything else, just listen to the body. Listen to the pull downwards, listen to the pull upwards. Find stillness between the two. That's nice. And start to listen to all the sounds around you. Sounds of the tent. The sounds of the desert in the setting sun. The wind on your skin. Just be here in the moment. Watching the passing images in your mind. The feel of your cushion or your seat beneath you. The feel of your breath as it moves in and out of your body. the sound of the wind, the sound of a plane above us. That's Kandaroi. She's our protector. Not trying to think about what comes next or what came before. Just being in the magic of the moment. And focusing on your body, see the inside as completely empty, like the sky. Going down inside from the inside tip of your head. Even the crevices, the hollow of your nose, the creases of your ears, everything like the clear blue sky inside. Going all the way down your neck and your torso. Going down your arms and the tips of your fingers. Nothing but clear blue sky, empty space. Going down to your pelvis and your legs, to your feet and the tip of your toes. Nothing but blue sky. Feel a sense of weightlessness. Like you could just float up into the clear blue sky. And picture yourself now floating up into the sky. There's sky inside and there's sky outside. Sky within, sky without, with only some thin shape or form in between, an outline. What is the difference between outside and in? You breathe in sky, you breathe out sky. In the sky. What is this picture that you see of your inside and outside? It is all mind. It's all vast like the sky. Infinite possibilities arising inside an empty space. Your form dancing in the sky. And then come back down from the sky back to your seat. And you can open your eyes. So I wanted to talk to you a little about what's happened since we've all last seen you. So, after an incredible flurry of trying to get the COs for our houses so that they would be legal to live in, I think we were working night and day until the very last day. We all made our last tearful goodbyes on December 30th of last year, and we crossed that gate that you just walked through, the Two Boots gate, for the last time for 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days. And it was in the dead of winter, and that day, that morning, it had snowed. So everything was blanketed in white, and it was completely silent. There was a very strong wind blowing as we walked from the temple to the gate, but then we passed through the gate and the wind completely stopped. And it was silent till we walked all the way up the hill to the top of the road at the Lama House. Then it was a very holy day that we started on Vajrayogini Day. There was some kind of strange mix-up in the calendar, and everybody said it wasn't Vajrayogini Day, and then finally they said it was. So we sort of lucked out. We got two. But we started on Vajrayogini Day, so we had to do this ritual. But everybody was so shell-shocked and scared that we did it and all ran home to our cabins and went to bed and slept for 2 days. And at least I did. I think probably the other retreatants did too. And the first month was like, it was like this getting prepared, really, because everybody had, I mean, they had just flown in from 25 different countries, like after doing all this stuff to close down their lives, you know, said goodbye to the parents and the families and the kids and the husbands and the, you know, closed down their jobs and all this stuff, all this worldly stuff. Everyone was running around like mad people doing all this stuff, and nobody really had time to even sit down for a second and remember why they were doing the retreat. So the first month was kind of like a getting into it period, like a bardo period before we started the first deep retreat. And we had to do a bunch of stuff. As much as everybody worked hard on the cabins, they weren't all finished. Is that an understatement? They weren't all finished. And, you know, there were some people like Ian and myself who were living in the Lama house because our house wasn't finished. And a couple other retreatants were living in the Onigampa. And everybody else was kind of living and working at their cabin at the same time. And so we were all sort of banding together, helping each other finish the last details, like floors on our cabins. You need a floor, you know, like you got to walk on it and stuff. So I learned a lot about building stuff. It was really fun. It's nice to like work with your hands and do some, like, I don't know, stuff with the earth. And so anyway, it was a time to help each other get situated for the retreat, whatever the other person needed, you know. There were propane lessons. Like, one person set their fridge on fire with the propane, so we decided that a lesson would be in order. Because nobody knows, I mean, coming from where we did, like, cities, you don't have propane tanks. So like, don't, here's how not to set yourself on fire using the propane. And then we did some more, I don't know, spiritual stuff, too. We had to go and bless all the cabins. One by one, and it's a special ceremony that we do. And you know, when you put a cabin down in an empty space, it's not really empty. There are other people living there. There are little creatures living there. There are spirit beings living there. All sorts of people living there. And so the ceremony is actually to go and ask their permission if you could actually live there too. And we were supposed to do this before we built the houses, but, you know, it was tantric. So we went and asked, and some of them were actually a little bit pissed that we didn't ask first. But most of them were okay. And the rest of them we appeased with cakes and stuff, so it all worked out. Right, Venerable Kunga? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it all worked out. So we did that, and we retook the tantric vows, which was really nice, because when you go into a really big spiritual endeavor like a 3-year retreat, it's really nice to have clean vows in your heart to start over again. It's like almost impossible to keep your tantric vows. So of course, everyone comes and says, well, I smashed them to pieces. Please give them to me again. And it was nice. It felt really good to all go in again in this really beautiful, clean way to start fresh and see if we could keep them this time. And then I think the most important thing that we did before we closed was we set our sam boundaries. And a sam is like a border. That's a Tibetan word, means border. And you've got four borders marking the place where you just will not leave for 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days. And it's really important to know exactly where those borders are that you will not cross. First of all, you don't want to actually be taking a walk, accidentally cross them, so you have to know where they are. But more importantly, it seals the mind. It seals the mind in to a certain space, to a certain world. We're actually trying to create a new space, a new sacred world in which to do our practice. And so we call on a special angel that her name is Kendarohi, and we ask her to be our protector and to guard the borders of these four walls. And the first wall that you actually crossed is the Tubuts Gate. That's our first border. That's the northern border, the border of fear. So these walls also prevent inner and outer demons from coming into us here in the retreat. So there are demons like fears that you would have. Fear about, I don't know, whether you'll make it, fear about, you know, all sorts of fears. Whether all the people that you know will die before you get out, you know, all sorts of fears like that. So we seal that border. And what we do is we ask Kandarohi to come and make a big, huge diamond wall that extends all the way down deep into the earth and then all the way up into the sky. And she does. And then we went to the next border, the western border, which is like the border of like attachment and missing things and desire, and wrong desire, and sealed that one off, and then went to the eastern border. And each time we went and sealed a border, you know, we go and we do this special prayer to Kandarohi, and we imagine these diamond walls, and each time it got quieter in the psalm. Every time we sealed a wall, you know, we went to the eastern border, which is like sealing against the obstacles of anger and also sorrow. And then finally we went to the southern border, which is like the border of doubt, maybe the hardest one. And the last border, you get to bring Kandarohi all sorts of cakes and stuff, and we had these huge things piled up on this rock, and it was really beautiful. It was like in the evening time. Our last border, it takes about an hour to walk there, and wanted to give the retreatants a really good space to walk around. So we have a really big borders. So we took a day to do each one. And when we sealed the last border, something happened. Something really magical happened. I don't know, it felt like the whole world started spinning, and we were in this vortex, and we were like sucked into a totally new universe. And I know maybe that sounds silly to you, but I asked some of the other retreatants and they said they felt it too. And so really, when you cross the Two Boots Gate, you're actually entering into our universe. You're entering into a totally new realm. And, you know, what is this realm? I think you could describe it like it's the realm of karma. It's the realm of pure karma. There's no lag time here. See, I told you. You have a moment of anger, and 10 minutes later, you burn your hand on the stove. And it's really obvious where the burn came from, you know? Because you're working so well and so consciously within the realm of mind that nothing fools you anymore. Like, something comes to you and you know exactly where it came from. It's apparent to you. It happens quickly and it happens strongly. And it's radical. It's a radical way to live. You make an offering to a certain angel that maybe you can't even see. And then 10 minutes later, you've got this beautiful thought in your mind, this beautiful new thought, a new realization, and you know where it came from. You know. So the realm of karma that you're, you know, we've brought you to the edge of, it's like there's certain kinds of karma that you're actually living within that's so deeply embedded into your being right now that you don't even know that you have it. You don't even know that it's a karma or that it could change. They call it Parabdha karma or Penje Kile in Tibetan, projecting karma, where it's your specific five heaps that you come into this lifetime with. And then you don't think that they're changeable. You know, it's like the color of the eyes that you were born with or how tall you are. Like, you don't think that's changeable. And there are certain things about your character. And there are certain things about the cycles, like the mini cycles of pain that you get involved in over and over in your life, that you're so deeply embedded in that you think that there's no other way. And you think that they're like the color of your eyes, that you can't change. And you know what? For the most part, that's true. You made a certain seed, and it actually already ripened when you were born in this life. It ripened into this body and this mind. It ripened into the five heaps that you're born with. And it's like you have to play out certain things. You know, it's like, well, will you get married or will you be ordained? You know, are you going to have children or not? Like, these things are already written. There was a story about this kind of karma. You know, Lord Buddha was still alive and he was walking on this planet. And he had this really dear disciple who also happened to be the king of a certain realm. And the king had taken off and sort of left his kingdom to follow Lord Buddha. And at some point, the king said, I have to go back. You know, my kingdom is waiting for me and my son, you know, I can't leave my son. And Lord Buddha said, don't go. Something bad's really going to happen to you if you go. Don't go. And he's like, I'm sorry, I have to go. You know, Lord Buddha was everything to him, but he still had to go. And he went back, and just before he got to his kingdom, his son met him on the road and killed him. And Lord Buddha had seen this, and he tried to stop it, and he couldn't do anything because this was this man's karma. You know, it was what was going to happen. It was already written, you know, just needed to be played out. So this kind of Prabhupada karma is kind of spooky, you know, you're like stuck with it for your lifetime. But here in the realm of karma, everything is changeable. Like even those things. Even the color of your eyes. Everything. Nothing is fixed. Nothing is fixed when you're working within the realm of pure mind. Because you're going to the source. So, so here we brought you to the edge of this world. And I had this joke with the retreatants. I said that's why it sometimes takes the caretakers a while to get you things, because they have to take the rocket ship to get to the world, you know. And I can't figure out how they keep the darn vegetables so fresh if they're traveling so far. But I like the picture of Venerable Chandra on the rocket ship. So you do all sorts of really meaningless to the world kind of things here in the retreat. You spend maybe 2 hours, maybe longer if you're not Connie, making a cake that she's really, we have like so many good cooks here. It's like amazing. You guys should be really jealous. Anyway. Right? We eat so well. I just, it's ridiculous. Like, we're supposed to be yogis and like there's these feasts, and I shouldn't be telling you this, but anyway, so you make this cake, right? And if you're like Ian and myself, you don't know how to cook so well, so it takes you a really long time. It's like hours. And it's a cake that you're never going to eat, and it's a cake that you're never going to see another human being eat. And you set it out for Kandarohi as an offering, and I don't know, maybe 10 minutes later, this huge black bird comes down and eats your offering, and then circles around the borders that you've just put up for your deep retreat 3 times. Like, exactly where you put the borders, they fly over. It's like, okay, so that's Kandarohi. That's what you're looking like these days. This is this place we're in. It's like the realm of gods and demons. There's nothing in between. It's like that here. You can see truth here. It's very clear. Thank you. Like, you may think that you are this small, insignificant person, just trying to live their life with a bunch of, like, other small, insignificant people around you in this big world. And, you know, you're just trying to get by, and you're just trying to find some tiny, tiny smidgen of happiness somewhere here and there. But it's different here. It's different here. You start to see what's actually going on. There's this huge, huge battle going on. It's like intergalactic between the forces of good and the forces of evil. And you're right in the middle of it. And it's like, at every moment, every single choice that you make, is a victory for either one or the other. Right before we got into the three-year retreat, I got some terrible news. One of my dear holy teachers, my Lama, Sir Jean Smith, he passed away from this world. And how I felt was, first of all, for my own self, it was like there was this huge absence, you know. I didn't call on him much, but I knew I could at any time, and he would be there. And then, you know, that was no longer there. And then I felt this incredible absence in the world of this force of goodness. And I feel like all the forces of goodness are leaving us, you know? And that's the Kali Yuga. Diminishing forces of goodness. That's where we live. This is the age that we live. And like one of the last great Tibetan scholars in the entire world, you know, left without passing on his lineage. And there's this absence now in the world of that goodness. And I felt it. And it was a victory for the forces of darkness. And it's like that, you know. So there's this huge battle going on between, I don't know, I think in some of the Hindu scriptures they say the devas and the asuras, right? It's like that. It's really like that. And where is the battle being waged? It's being waged in the very center of your heart. That's where the battle is. That's where it all goes down. What I think, what I do, how I feel is going to shift the balance between good and evil in this world. And it becomes apparent here. It's what it's like here. You know, the retreatants, They didn't come here because they're seeking knowledge. They didn't even come here to see that ever elusive thing called emptiness. It's not enough to bring people here. There's lots of people who think they might want to see emptiness. Not all of them are here. The retreatants didn't come here even to get out of their own cycle of pain. Because who really cares about your own cycle of pain? Like, you can't even see the cycles of pain you're in, and you're in total denial anyway. All the people who are in that frame of mind are still in the outside world. Now, the retreatants, all of them, they came because they looked around in the world and they had people that they knew and loved, and they saw them in pain, and they couldn't bear it anymore. Like, maybe they grew up with parents who hurt themselves over and over, some kind of substance abuse or something else, or maybe one of their parents died, or maybe they had children and they knew that they couldn't protect them from the world's pain. Whatever it was, it brought them here. And so they decided to risk like 3 years of their lives on this hope that they could figure out how to stop pain so that they could help the people that they loved. And they never saw anybody do it. And then, you know, the only thing that their teachers told them is, well, you can't see it until you do it yourself. Which is like, I don't know, the skeptical mind starts to rear up at that point, like, what are you trying to pull over me, you know? So it's like this huge leap of faith, right, to be here. Because you don't know for sure it's going to work. And even if you totally believe your teachers, you don't know if you can do it. But they had no other choice. Because they looked around and tried every other possible avenue of recourse to stop the pain of the ones they loved, and they couldn't figure it out. So this is it, you know? Go into the realm of mind. Change everything. Absolutely everything. So what stops pain? You know, what do we do here in this retreat to stop people's pain? Meditate? Meditation doesn't stop people's pain. See, emptiness? Even emptiness doesn't stop people's pain. Meditation is a useful tool because the more you focus the mind, the quicker you can change the karma. Focusing the mind is a powerful thing. And then seeing emptiness, it's also a powerful tool. You see emptiness directly and you come out and the world is still in pain. But you use it to what? To find love. Love is the most powerful force in the entire universe. Please don't make any noises, okay? Love can change anything at all. Love can defeat vast armies of evil demons. Love is everything. Love is the most powerful thing in the whole world. Unfortunately, until you understand emptiness, there's too much fear in your heart to be able to love, really. You won't be able to let go of all of the fear, which is just this grasping to yourself, you know. But strangely, you know, it's only the people who love that get to see emptiness. Because you won't be able to let go of that fear or that self-grasping enough to pass through that door into ultimate reality without it, without love. So they feed on each other and they support each other and they simultaneously bring you up and up and up into where you need to go, making a perfect world. So in our last Lerong, our last deep retreat, by the way, means you go into your cabin and you don't see any of the other retreatants at all. And you do 4 sessions of meditation a day, you know, starting before dawn and ending at various times, but theoretically around midnight. And it's a really hardcore practice, you know, and a really hardcore transformation process. And people are like exhausted and elated at the end of them. So we sort of like take a month off in between each deep retreat period just to chill out and get ready for the next one, you know. So that's pretty much our schedule. So we were in a deep retreat recently, and we just got out like, I don't know, like a week and a half ago. And started to smell something blowing from the southeast. And it smelled like fire. And then started to see smoke there that Well, they kind of at first just look like clouds, but clouds that didn't ever move. Right? Earl knows it's like his house was like right there. It's scary. But then, you know, we get this really scary note from the caretakers right in the middle of our deep retreat. Like, we have arranged evacuation procedures in the case that the fire reaches you. Like, it was very jarring like that, you know? Very, I don't know. You're in a very, very quiet place during the deep retreats. And then to think about having to evacuate, you know? And to break our psalm. That's the thing that... I mean, one of the things that was going through my heart was... Oh, the cabins, you know? I mean, we worked so hard to build them. We worked so hard to raise the money to build them. And I just... To see them all go up in smoke would just really break my heart. And... But we could manage, you know? Could figure it out. We're resourceful in here. But the idea of like actually breaking the promise to stay here for 3 years, 3 months, 3 days, you know, it was something that I just couldn't imagine, you know. And then looking to the southeast after the letter came, all of a sudden, you know, these huge, huge clouds of smoke, that there's a mountain to our south, and it just towered, the smoke towered over the mountain. Like, it was just so, it was awe-inspiring if it wasn't so upsetting, right? And these red, red, red clouds of smoke, you know, they weren't just black anymore. They were shining with the light of the fire below. It's like that logic text in Tibetan, that logical debate, you know, you're on a mountain pass and you see smoke and like, you deduce that because of the smoke, there must be fire. And that's a valid perception because, right? It's a valid perception. So we had valid perceptions of the fire in the southeast. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, what do I do? You know, I'm supposed to be protecting the retreat. That's my job. Like, this is on me, you know. So I listened to who was behind the fire. And there are... this place, I don't know if you know the history of this place, but it was a very... special sacred place for a certain Native American tribe of warriors. And then the army came in and they had like this, I don't remember how long the war was, it was like 50 years long battle here for this land. And in a similar way, this happened all over this region, you know. And the spirits are still here. And some of them are very angry. You know, their land was taken away. The blood of their people was spilled all over this place. They were lied to and cheated and their people were destroyed. And maybe they have a right to be angry. These restless spirits here. But they were coming to destroy the one thing that could bring peace here to this land. And how to make them see that, you know. And then you look deeper, you know. You see, okay, there's an angry person who's causing some kind of destruction. And it actually seems like the destruction is of a nature that has gotten far beyond what I could actually control. I mean, all the firefighters in southern Arizona couldn't control it. And then you look at, you know, where this is really coming from. And why am I seeing this being of hatred and anger coming towards me with this fire to bent on destroying all of our hopes and dreams here? It's because I have that same hatred and anger in my own heart. They are me. And that's love. They are me. I hear you. I hear your pain. I take it on. It's my own. I know it's mine to deal with, you know. What would you do if it was yours? How would you appease their pain? First, you have to listen to their pain. You have to listen so much that it becomes yours. Like, you have to feel it like it's yours. You have to cry for them. You have to weep tears of sorrow for all the women and children who were massacred on this place while they watched. You have to feel the pain like it's yours. Because it is. We run from pain, we shun it, and then there's no love, and then there's no resolution. And the hatred and the anger just gets bigger and bigger. Just take it. It's yours. And then what do? I talked to them, I promised them I would make this place a place of peace that would heal this land. I hoped that was was good enough. We didn't get another note. As far as I know, it's still there. I don't know. But we don't see any more smoke, so... So I'd like to do one more short meditation, maybe. I know I have this feeling that you guys have been meditating all day long. And you're probably kind of tired of it. We're not tired of it because we do it all day long anyway. Right, guys? But... This is not really so much of a formal meditation. I sort of wanted to see if we could all join together in this effort to help appease the spirits on this land. And purify this place and purify the hearts of those who are hurt. So what I'd like to ask you to do is simply to try and listen maybe to them. Sometimes when you're up on the mountain, especially Geshe Michael's Hill, actually, for some reason, and also our hill. But you can hear their song playing in the wind. I can hear it anyway. I can hear these strange, like, native songs that I've never heard before. They're quite beautiful. And, so... Please don't make any noise. So try to listen. Try to imagine what it felt like for them to have their land stolen. For them to watch all their people be slaughtered or captured and imprisoned. For their homes to be taken away, for their life, their way of life to be taken away, for their whole culture to be destroyed. Thank you. take it on as yours. Like, this is your pain. Don't be afraid. I feel all this hesitation when I said that. Take it. It's okay. It's yours anyway. It'll follow you around until you take it. You think your heart doesn't have room for these people? Your heart is as big as the sky. Okay, that's all really. This is how we could heal all of the world's strife, all of the world's pain. Go home tonight and think about your hesitation and where it comes from. Why you resist what you're afraid of, what you're holding on to. That's what we do all day long. All we have to do is sit around and think about, why is it that I don't have perfect love in my heart that shines out to a billion beings all the time? Why is it that I'm not in a state of perfect bliss all the time? That's why, by the way. That's why. Bliss, love. Same. So, one last thing. The retreatants, you know, we don't talk normally, hopefully. But we like to play music and we like to sing. And it's a source of great joy for us to sing. And many songs have been coming to many people, very beautiful, beautiful songs. And I thought I would just share the first song that came to me, came in the first night of the first deep retreat, after we had spent a month living at the Lama House, which is like, I don't know, it has like 100,000 mice in it. and probably even more ghosts. Crazy place. It's a crazy place, but it's fun. And there was no power, and so it was like, you know, the wind would just blow through the house. It's cold in the winter here. It's colder than it is hot here. You'd be surprised. You're coming in the summer, so you can't even imagine that. But so, yeah, the very first night of the first deep retreat, which was like a month after we entered, exactly, was the first night that our house was ready enough for us to go and live in. The retreatants worked really, really super hard to make us floors. And it took about a month and some other stuff, like lots and lots of other stuff. Brought all our furniture up and all this stuff. So, anyway, without any more explanation, I think I'll talk about the song later. So, I'll just sing it for you now, if you don't mind. I have like a backup band behind the curtains. Like, are you ready, backup band? You can't talk. I can't see them. Doesn't matter. You should just start. Again, we're on the floor in our house up on the hill. The wind beats at our door, but our hearts beat very still. Here I am with you. So, thank you. I pray that all the goodness that we have done together here and spreads out into the hearts of everybody in the world and beyond. That we turn the balance towards light and purity and happiness for everyone. And love. See you tomorrow.